Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Good evening, everyone. Okay, we are continuing with the study of the Samaditti Sutta, the Discourse on Right View, Sutta number 9 in the Majjhima Nikaya. And last time we discussed the section on clinging, upadana, and explore the ways in which clinging is the condition for bhava, for existence. And in that section on clinging, it is said that craving, tanha, is the cause for the arising of clinging. But before we explain that, we will take the section on craving and see how craving is analyzed. So that takes us now on to page 138. And we are in section 36. It's just preliminary, but we really start with section 37. When, friends, a noble disciple understands craving, the origin of craving, the cessation of craving, and the way leading to the cessation of craving, in that way he is one of right view, and so forth, who has arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, this is the condensed teaching, the Udesa. Now we go into the elaborate teaching, the explanation. Paragraph 38, what is craving? What is the origin of craving? What is the cessation of craving? What is the way leading to the cessation of craving? Then the answer, there are these six classes of craving. Craving for forms, craving for sounds, craving for odors, craving for flavors, craving for tangibles, craving for mind objects. With the arising of feeling, there is the arising of craving. With the cessation of feeling, there is the cessation of craving. The way leading to the cessation of craving is just this Noble Eightfold Path, and so on. Okay, here we have craving analyzed or classified according to its objects. But there is another way of analyzing craving, and that is, we can say, according to type. But let's backtrack a little bit to the types of clinging. And to review, we have the four types of clinging. What are these four types of clinging? Clinging to sense pleasures, clinging to views, clinging to rules and observances, and clinging to a doctrine of self, right?
And clinging arises from
craving. And though this formulation of dependent origination uses the analysis of craving in terms of the six sense objects, I think because in the usual formula, it's relating craving to feeling, and feeling is analyzed according to the type of contact from which it arises, and then contact is explained by way of the six sense bases. But I think sort of psychologically or philosophically, it's more interesting to take the three types of craving and see how they relate to the four types of clinging. So we have there's always this problem with the recorder. We have the craving for sense pleasures, craving for existence, and then craving for non-existence, or craving for annihilation. Maybe we could see how these three types of cravings relate to the four types of clinging. Okay, craving for sense pleasures, how would that relate to these four types of clinging? Any ideas? Any direct connections? No idea. Let me call Professor Hahn and tell him that... Oh, no need to call him. He was already watching in on this special device that Fenwald Gwatching has put on the computer. Yes, Professor Hahn, your pupil doesn't have any idea. Okay, so we'll cancel the project then? Okay. So, anybody have any idea? Can you spell that out a little more explicitly? Yeah. Spell it out a little more explicitly. Okay, good, very good idea. Okay. Okay, so we could say that the craving for sensual pleasures leads to the clinging to sensual pleasures. We might conjecture that here that the craving is desire in the stage when one doesn't have the object, and then clinging is the holding to an object that one has already obtained. So in that way, we could see some distinction between the two in terms of the way desire operates at different points in time. Can the craving for sense pleasures condition any of these other types of clinging? Or is there just a one-to-one relationship? Maybe you could you specify it? It's a good point. Specify a little bit more.
Well, you know, our desires in general are just going to play into how we view things. We want something, so we want a little mula and logic. I think we're thinking rationally, but we're really being driven by our desires.
Yeah. Though I'm thinking more, when you said, mentioned views, I was thinking the way craving for sense pleasures that could sometimes lead to the actual adoption of particular views. Like somebody might have a very strong craving for sense pleasures, and so they might adopt the view that this is the only life we live, there's nothing beyond this life, we're here only once, might as well get in as much pleasure as we can. We have just, 75, 80 years. Maybe the peak when we can really enjoy the pleasures is between the ages of maybe 16 and 36. After that, one is burnt out. So, while you're young, healthy, might as well enjoy yourself. You might go on in other ways, but let's just move on to well, I could also just give an idea that somebody has a craving for sense pleasures, but they might think that the sense pleasures come to fulfillment not in this life, but in some celestial realm, some heavenly realm. And so they will conceive the idea of some kind of heavenly world in which all of our desires for sensual enjoyments will be fulfilled. And then that could even lead to, that will lead to a clinging to views, and also to sometimes to a clinging to rules and observances. You follow these particular rituals, these particular practices, and then you get the merits that will lead to the heavenly rebirth, and there you will enjoy your sense pleasures forever. Okay, craving for existence will condition which particular types of clinging, especially? I think craving for existence can lead to strong clinging to doctrine of self. And any other type of clinging? The clinging to views. Particularly if there's this craving for eternal existence, then one has the view of some kind of eternal realm, eternal world, and then the view of an eternal self, an everlasting self that will exist in that world or in that form. It could. Any other ideas about this? Our learned visitor from Germany?
Yeah.
And the type of craving that I've always found rather strange and hard to understand is the craving for non-existence, what's called vibhava tanha, craving for non-existence. It's always seemed to me like somewhat like the odd man amongst the types of craving. In the commentaries, they explain it as craving conjoined with a view of annihilation. And there's not very much said to explain this type of craving in the sutta texts themselves. But there's one passage, or at least a few passages, which seem to support that, that there are some ascetics and Brahmins who hold the view that when this self, this existing self, is annihilated and destroyed with the breakup of the body at death, when the self or this existing person is annihilated and destroyed, that is the peaceful, that is the excellent. So I just see this type of craving.
Is that materialism? Or belief that after the physical existence, after the physical existence dies, that there's just nothing?
In this famous sutta called the Brahmajala Sutta, the discourse on the net of views, this is where the Buddha classifies many of the existing types of philosophical views that were being held during his time. He mentions seven types of annihilationist view. Only one of these types of annihilationist view seems to be identical with materialism, which holds that this person consists of the body with it made up of the four elements, and when this self consisting of the body, the four elements, breaks up and passes away, how does it go? Then this person is annihilated and destroyed. But other types of annihilationist view posit successively more subtle types of self. And then they say when that self is annihilated and destroyed, but when that self, how does it go? I forgot exactly how those views are formulated. But they speak of complete annihilation as occurring when those successively more subtle selves are annihilated. So it could be the case that they conceive of these subtle selves as transmigrating or reincarnating, and then at a certain point, perhaps a meditator has to reach one of these higher meditative attainments, and then through that attainment, that self is annihilated. Perhaps it's all conjecture, a largely conjecture. Anyway, let us go on. So we can see that there are different ways in which craving can serve or function as a condition for clinging, for the different types of clinging. Okay, and now we come to the condition for craving. So we jump over to paragraph 41. When friends, a noble disciple, you see, in paragraph 38, feeling is mentioned as the condition for craving. So now the next section of the discourse takes feeling as its subject of investigation. So taking section 41, when friends, a noble disciple understands feeling, the origin of feeling, the cessation of feeling, and the way leading to the cessation of feeling, in that way he is one of right view, and so forth, who has arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, then the analysis, and what is feeling, what is the origin of feeling, what is the cessation of feeling, what is the way leading to the cessation of feeling? Okay, there are these six classes of feeling. Feeling born of eye contact, feeling born of ear contact, feeling born of nose contact, feeling born of tongue contact, feeling born of body contact, feeling born of mind contact. With the arising of contact, there is the arising of feeling. With the cessation of contact, there is the cessation of feeling. The way leading to the cessation of feeling is just this Noble Eightfold Path, that is right view up to right concentration, and so on. Actually, I just realized that for the next three sections, it's easier to begin with the sixfold base and work down to feeling. Otherwise, I have to somewhat go backwards in my explanations. So let us jump ahead to section 49. We'll take the sixfold base, work down to feeling, then from the sixfold base we'll work back in the series to nama rupa, mentality, materiality. Okay, so now we're in 49. When friends, I'm sorry for the inconvenience, folks. When friends, a noble disciple understands the sixfold base, the origin of the sixfold base, the cessation of the sixfold base, and the way leading to the cessation of the sixfold base, in that way he is one of right view. Okay, the short teaching, the elaboration. What is the sixfold base? What is the origin of the sixfold base? What is the cessation of the sixfold base? What is the way leading to the cessation of the sixfold base? Okay, the term, the expression here is salayatana. It's translated rather awkwardly as sixfold base because in Pali, salayatanang is a neuter singular, which is formed by taking a collective word for six, sal, and then grouping all of the bases together into one. But in English, it sounds rather awkward to say sixfold base, so I think it's more natural simply to say the six bases. Or more explicitly, it's the six sense bases. So what are these six sense bases? We call them the eye base, the ear base, the nose base, the tongue base, the body base, and the mind base. The important word is, the Pali word is ayatana. This is the phrase salayatanang. That is the expression that's translated sixfold base. And it's the same as we could use a synonymous expression, cha ayatanani, six bases or six sense bases. And what is referred here, what is being referred to here technically when we speak about, for example, the eye base, is not simply what we call the eyeball. By the ear base is not this wiggly thing that protrudes here, but in the case of each sense base, it is a subtle kind of material phenomena which is receptive to its particular type of sense object. If we were to use modern biological terminology, perhaps what we would call the eye base would be the light receptor cells in the eye. Perhaps we would take all the phenomena involved in visual perception, the light receptor cells, the retina, light rods and cones, together with particular cells in the optic nerve. In terms of the classical Abhidhamic analysis of what is meant by the eye base, an expression is used, pasada rupa, which means, I think if we were to find it suitable translation, we could call it the receptive material phenomena. Literally, it means transparent or clear material phenomena. And in the Abhidhamic way of analyzing the bases, this pasada rupa, this clear or transparent phenomena, these are the phenomena that are receptive to each of their respective types of sense objects. I'll write that expression, pasada rupa. And so the ear base would be those particular types of cells within the ear, inside the ear, that are receptive to sounds, that are able to transform, say, the vibrations in the ear into perceived sounds. And what's called the nose base is not this thing sticking out here, this protuberance here, but it would be particular type of pasada rupa, sensitive matter, someplace located deep inside here, which is receptive to odors, to scents, and is able to make those scents available to consciousness so that they can be perceived as odors and as scents. And what is meant by the tongue, again, would not be this, not this whole organ that sticks out here, but it would be the types of sensitive material phenomena on the surface of the tongue that are responsive and receptive to the different tastes, to different flavors, and that are capable of responding to those tastes and making them available to consciousness. Similarly, what's meant by the body base is not the entire physical body, but the body base runs through the entire, say, surface of the skin, and also it runs within the body, throughout the whole body. It's that aspect of the body which is sensitive to tactile sensations. That aspect of the body, that bodily sensitivity, which is capable of responding to tactile sensations, of receiving tactile sensations, and making them available to consciousness. So when one speaks of a base, what is meant by a base is a base for the arising of consciousness. The sixth base is somewhat a little problematic one. And its identity, it's not really investigated and defined precisely in the suttas, in the old Nikayas or Agamas. So this was a topic which was taken up in the Abhidhamma and then explored more in the commentaries. And I think that there are probably differences of opinions between the different early Buddha schools, and I think even within the Theravada Pali commentators, different opinions were held. But what is called the mind base, we could speak very generally, would be that particular aspect of... You have to be careful now. The mind base is not a physical organ. It's not something like the brain, and it's not identical to what was called the heart base, which the ancient Buddhists or medieval Buddhists conceived of as the basis for the functioning of the mind. But the mind base would be, we call it a basic, very simple mental function which precedes the arising of mind consciousness, and so can be seen as the door for the arising of mental consciousness, or how do we call this, intellective consciousness, the sixth type of consciousness distinct from sensual, from sense consciousness. And each type, each one of these, okay, these six bases collectively are called internal sense bases because they can be conceived of, they can be considered as pertaining internally to the person. They pertain to ourselves. Each of these six pertain to our own psychophysical organism. But corresponding to each of these internal bases, there is an external base. So corresponding to the eye base, what is there? What is the external base? Speak, somebody. Visual object, or usually we call it form. The visible form base, rupayatana, corresponding to the ear base, it's too obvious, I won't even ask, sound base, corresponding to the nose, odor base corresponding to the tongue, taste base, flavor base, corresponding to the body. This is an awkward expression, tactile object base. Tactile sensation base. And then corresponding to the mind base, what is there? Does anybody know the technical term for this? Yeah, this is one translation used, mind object base. Excuse me? No, we've already had the answer. Mind object base, mental phenomena base. In Pali, it's called, we use this word, Dhamma, which means the Buddha's teaching or the law of reality. Here it's used to mean the objects of mano, the objects of mind. Dham ayatana, the base of dhammas. Here dhamma has the sense of just about whatever can be known by the mind apart from the senses, or even through the senses, what can be abstracted from sense phenomena. Okay, so now we have the six internal bases and the six external bases. And this provides us with, you might call, literally, it provides us with a basis for understanding contact. Because it is through these If we jump up to paragraph 46, on page 140, just the third line down, we see with the arising of the sixfold base, there is the arising of contact. So the sixfold base is the necessary condition for contact. So now let's go into the section on contact, starting with paragraph 45. When, friends, a noble disciple understands contact, the origin of contact, the cessation of contact, and the way leading to the cessation of contact, in that way, he is one of right view who has arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, then the analysis or explanation. And what is contact? What is the origin of contact? What is the cessation of contact? What is the way leading to the cessation of contact? There are these six classes of contact. Okay, what are the six? Eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. With the arising of the sixfold base, there is the arising of contact. With the cessation of the sixfold base, there is the cessation of contact. The way leading to the cessation of contact is just this noble eightfold path that is right view through right concentration. Okay, what now exactly is contact? Okay, the word contact is defined or explained elsewhere in the suttas. I think if we take, for example, sutta number 18, this is the Honey Bowl Sutta, paragraph number 16, page 203. Everybody have that? Paragraph 16. Okay, dependent on the I and forms, I consciousness arises. Okay, the I is the internal base, forms are the external base. I consciousness, we haven't had consciousness yet brought in our sutta, but I consciousness is mentioned here. The meeting of the three is contact. Then we will see with contact as condition there is feeling. That's as far as we have to go here, except we go over to the next page to bring in the other sense bases. On page 204, dependent on the ear and sounds, and so on. Dependent on the nose and odors, dependent on the tongue and flavors, dependent on the body and tangibles or tactile sensations, dependent on the mind and mind objects, mind consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. Okay, so contact is the meeting or coming together of these three things: sense object, sense base, and the corresponding consciousness. Or I like to explain it as the meeting of consciousness with the object through the corresponding sense base. Since the sense base functions somewhat as a door for, you could see, consciousness to go out to the object and say hello to the object, or you could say for the object to come in and meet consciousness. Again, this is speaking metaphorically. But in any case, we have these three things coming together, and their meeting, their encounter, is what we call contact. And so, of these three things, in this particular passage that we're dealing with now, contact is said to be based upon the sixfold base, because the sixfold base is actually the means by which consciousness can meet the object and deal with the object. If, for example, the eye is injured and can no longer function, then we might have a functioning mind. There might be visible forms, but eye consciousness doesn't really arise, and so there's no seeing of any forms. If the ear is damaged, then sounds can be taking place, but there's no real ear consciousness taking place, no meeting of ear consciousness with the sounds. So the six sense bases are the indispensable condition for the occurrence of contact. And it is when one acquires a particular set, these six sense bases, that contact with the world of sensory phenomena takes place. Okay, then contact is the condition for feeling. Here we move into paragraph 42. But first we could take 41, paragraph 41, the brief statement. When, friends, a noble disciple understands feeling, the origin of feeling, the cessation of feeling, and the way leading to the cessation of feeling, in that way he is one of right view and has arrived at this true Dhamma. And what is feeling? What is the origin of feeling? What is the cessation of feeling? What is the way leading to the cessation of feeling? Okay, there are these six classes of feeling. Now notice, this is the important point here. Feeling is going to be distinguished in terms of the contact through which it arises. Feeling born of eye contact. Feeling born of ear contact. Feeling born of nose contact, feeling born of tongue contact, feeling born of body contact, feeling born of mind contact. With the arising of contact, there is the arising of feeling. With the cessation of contact, there is the cessation of feeling. The way leading to the cessation of feeling is just this Noble Eightfold Path that is right view to right concentration. Okay, so when an object, we can say, impinges upon a sense faculty, a sense base, consciousness arises, the coming together of the consciousness with the object through the sense base, that is contact. From that contact, there arises feeling. Actually, many phenomena arise through that contact. There arises with that contact, there arises feeling, there arises perception, there arises volition, there arises a whole congeries, a whole nest of mental phenomena. But of that whole nest of mental phenomena, the Buddha has singled out feeling as being especially important, because feeling functions as the strong supporting condition for craving. And so it's especially instrumental in dependent origination. Usually, elsewhere in the suttas, we have feeling divided or distinguished into three types of feeling. We have feeling can be... What are these three types of feeling? My memory is a little weak today. Pleasant feeling? Does the text say unpleasant? Have to be very faithful to the text. Pleasant feeling. I was going to say, you must be enjoying good health. I envy you. What is the other feeling? Painful. Yeah, I saw you getting acupuncture a few minutes ago. So painful feeling. And what is the third feeling? Neither pleasant. Right. Neither painful nor pleasant. So neither painful nor pleasant feeling, or sometimes called simply neutral feeling. Okay, so through any of these sense contacts, any of these three types of feelings can arise, according to the suttas. Okay, now moving from feeling, then we move into craving. We come back, we rejoin craving, which we left about a half an hour ago. In paragraph 38, coming down about 5-6 lines, with the arising of feeling, there is the arising of craving. With the cessation of feeling, there is the cessation of craving. The way leading to the cessation of craving is just this Noble Eightfold Path. Okay, I like to deal with this in terms of the three types of feelings: pleasant, painful, neutral. Of these three types of feelings, which type does craving have the strongest investment in? Pleasant feeling, right? Does craving have any interest or concern with the other two? No? What happens if one is in pain? Yeah. Or one craves to get rid of the pain. Okay, so look at it in a kind of general way. We could say that even in relation to painful feeling, the craving can arise. A craving to get rid of the pain, or a craving for pleasure as a way of escaping from the pain. And how about this neutral or neither pleasant nor painful feeling? How? That's true. It's very true. Sometimes people like this dull, quiet, call it dull, indifferent feeling. Sometimes at a very ordinary, mundane level. And then this neutral feeling also occurs at a very refined, subtle level, the level of in the fourth jhana and the formless meditative attainments. And though where it becomes a very peaceful, neutral feeling. And so if there's no investigation, no wisdom, then there can take place a subtle craving for that peace, tranquility, of those higher attainments, and then a clinging to them. Now, this link between feeling and craving is a very, very important one, because this is the link in the series of dependent origination, at least one of the places where the forward movement of dependent origination can be broken. Because feelings naturally arise, that's inevitable. But it is by entering into that gap between craving, between feeling and craving, entering into that gap with mindfulness and clear comprehension, that one can prevent the feelings from triggering off the types of craving that they naturally trigger off. Well, one could say that one could prevent the three types of feelings from triggering off different reactions One could prevent the pleasant feeling from triggering off craving, the painful feeling from triggering off aversion, and the dull, neutral feeling from maintaining delusion. And then that way, one stops the forward movement, the movement from craving to clinging, and then from clinging to the creation of more bhava, of more existence. Okay, maybe we stop now and then ask if there's any questions. Yep, Suki, please. Crave to cut the karma only in their craving? I didn't quite.
No, I mean, if they have a, I see really there's a strong yearning, strong craving.
Yeah.
Not to come back to this life.
That should be the craving for, we call it a desire for liberation. It's never, the desire for liberation is never treated as the craving for non-existence. But as I said, the craving for non-existence, it's really not clearly defined or explained in the suttas. It just seems to be illustrated occasionally by the view of these ascetics and Brahmins who say that when this, who speak with regard to an existing person, when this, do you know the exact words, Venerable Nalio? Do you remember? From the beginning? With the self, it said with regard to a self. Okay, so it's when the self is cut off, annihilated, and exterminated, and doesn't exist anymore. He didn't say liberation is neither existence.
What did he say that about? Did he say that about his own death?
No, what he said, there's a question whether a Tathagata, that's in this case an enlightened one, a liberated one, exists after death or does not exist after death. Both exists after death, does not exist after death. Okay, the way this is understood, you see, these were views that were debated, argued by the Buddha's contemporaries. And different thinkers in this period held different views on this issue. So the way it's understood is that the view that the Tathagata, or the liberated person, exists after death, this would be a type of eternalism, which holds that there's some kind of self-entity within the liberated person that goes on existing forever after the liberated one dies. The view that the Tathagata doesn't exist after death, that would be a form of the annihilationist view, which holds that there is a self in the Tathagata, and when the Tathagata passes away, that self is annihilated forever. The Tathagata both exists and does not exist after death. That seems to be an attempt at a syncretic view, a view which combines aspects of both the eternalist and annihilationist view. Don't ask me how that is done, but there were those who tried to do this. And then the view... Excuse me? The Buddha always just says, to say this doesn't apply, to say that doesn't apply. Yeah. Any questions that relate more directly to the dependent origination series? Anything unclear? Paul? Yeah, that's a good point. Because this, let me just say that this is an important point that craving, for craving to cease, does not actually require feeling. It seems like I'm contradicting the sutta, but for craving to cease does not actually require feeling to cease. Because an enlightened person, while alive, eliminates craving, but continues to experience feeling. I have to say I'm a bit stumped by this. You want to answer that?
I think you can understand as a momentary cessation of feeling in the experience of nirvana, because what is the samadhi? When he talks about the samadhi of the Arya self, feelings momentarily cease. So the cessation of feeling is a condition for the cessation of craving, but the cessation of feeling is momentary. It's not a total cessation for the rest of the life.
So within this momentary nibbanic experience, with the cessation of that feeling,
the Arya Samaga has experienced the cessation of dukkha, the cessation of feeling, the cessation of order.
Okay, that's a way to explain it. Perhaps another way to see this is to see that actually you see all of these sections are abstracted from the whole chain of cessation that goes back to the cessation of ignorance. So then we really have to see all of them ceasing finally and ultimately with the cessation of ignorance. That's another way to see it. Yeah. So there could be different ways of seeing. Oh, say again. I think I understand. Say again.
Yeah. If you really are mindful and watching, when certain pleasant feelings arise,
yeah,
and you, instead of just craving or attaching it, if you just simply watch, knowing that this will disappear,
yeah, and then there's a cessation of craving too. Yeah, that's a good way to understand it. I don't know whether that is the way intended here, but that is a way to understand it. But this maybe is more a case that when the craving ceases, then the feeling which is kept alive by that craving ceases. But it might also be the case that with the cessation of feeling, that a feeling that is keeping a craving going, when you're just observing the feeling, when that feeling goes and the craving goes, that's also a way to look at it. But I think we're going to have to end our session tonight. Okay, thank you all for your attention. And now we will end with the sharing of the merits with the devas, the buddhas, the nagas, and with all sentient beings in this world, wishing them all to be well, happy. Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Punyantang Anumodiva Chirang Rakantu Sasanam Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Punyantang Anumodiva Chirang Rakantu Desanam Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Punyantang Anumodiva Chirang Rakantu Mangparam Etavata Cha Amhehi Sampadang Punya Sampadang Sabe Deva Anumodantu Sabha Sampati Siddhya Etavata Cha Amhehi Sampadang Punya Sampadang Sabe Bhuta Anumodantu Sabha Sampati Siddhya Etavata Cha Amhehi Sampadang Punya Sampadang Sabe Sata Anumodantu Sabha Sampati Siddhya.